Welcome to Green and Red, Scrappy Politics for Scrappy People, a regular podcast on radical, environmental and anti-capitalist politics, brought to you by Bob Bazanko and Scott Parkin.
Welcome to the silky smooth sounds of the Green and Red podcast. I'm your co-host, Scott Parkin, in Berkeley, California. And as always, I am joined by
Bob Bazanko from the land of William McKinley.
The land of William McKinley, the wilds of Northeast Ohio. When I did an interview with someone the other day that you weren't able to join, and I told them that you were off on assignment in the wilds of Northeast Ohio. Folks, we just want to acknowledge that things are a little bit crazy and chaotic, and we are here for you. And we really want to acknowledge how we've been seeing the sort of hurt feelings that have been coming out of the White House in recent days. And you may or may not have seen this episode at the UN where Donald Trump and Melania were not able to go up the escalator. Someone turned off the escalator, short-circuited, and Trump and Melania had to walk up the stairs. And just thinking about it, Donald Trump's a sensitive guy. We see that play out on social media every day.
And all his doctors keep talking about what an amazing physical specimen he is. They say 6'3", 220. I'm 6'2", 220, and Donald Trump's ass is three times wider than I am, but at any rate. But walking up the stairs, how could you expect somebody to do that?
The triple sabotage just amazes me.
What was the other one? The teleprompter? What was the third?
It was the mics and the noise because of the translator earpieces at the UN. It was the other piece.
Anyway, that's a segue into what we're really going to talk about, which is a little more serious than that.
Yeah.
Which is this new furor that Trump has created over political violence and especially blaming it on the left. And today,
the radical left.
We're recording this on September 26th. And I believe it was this morning, he was talking to some reporters and said, it's all on the left. The right doesn't do anything. All political violence is from the left. But they better be careful because the right is a bunch of bad people. He's inviting rightist repression. He's inciting violence, as he always does. And you expect that from him. To me, the most frightening part of that is he gets no pushback when he says this stuff. As usual, Green and Red podcast this year to correct the record, right? To talk about political violence because the media has to do everything in both sides. They did this and they did that. Reminds me, remember The Simpsons? Sure, our bird down the house, but you have a gambling problem, Homer to Marge, right? And that's where we are. And so today, what we want to do is talk about how political violence is not a both sides issue. It is an overwhelming and for certain periods, exclusive right-wing phenomena. And we're going to do a little bit of historical background and then talk about what's going on today.
The one thing I want to throw out there is that I also, with all the quote-unquote violence that is happening against right-wing figures or right-wing institutions, according to Trump, is that I don't think Trump cares that much about any of that. He and the people who work at the White House see this as an opportunity to go after their opponents, their political opponents. We've already been seeing that he laid off a lot of the federal civil service. He's gone after universities. He's gone after law firms, all of which have capitulated at some level. But now he's going after civil society. He's going after funders. He's going after nonprofits. And it's just like really important to note that what is really wrapped up in all this, like terrorism, domestic terrorism and political violence, is just an opportunity to go after people who are opposed to him in what is mostly a civil sort of way.
Yeah. And when he does this, the left tends to say, oh my God, let's not push him any further. He's going to do this and this no matter what. I keep going back. One of my favorite historical anecdotes ever, and it always will be, when MacGeorge Bundy was in Vietnam in early 1965 and the Viet Cong attacked the base at Pleiku Coup where he was staying. And they essentially did it to show that they could hit whenever they wanted. And they come back and Johnson announces a new bombing campaign and somebody's to ask Bundy, is this because of the attack at Pleiku Coup? And Bundy very famously said, Pleiku Coups are like streetcars. You'll always find a reason. So it could be
this. There's always another one around the corner.
There's another one on the corner. You wait 15 minutes, another one's going to show up, right? It could be the shooting of Charlie Kirk. It could be an attack on ICE. It could be anything. Trump is going to find a reason, or he's going to make up a reason, just like he, what did he say? They saved $17 trillion or something like that, right? He just makes stuff up, and the media reports it. So I think it's useful to talk a little bit about what political violence really means in the United States, how it's actually played out historically and where we are today with regard to that.
Yeah. And so what we wanted to kick off with is a little bit, because they keep talking about how there's this uptick in left violence in the country. And there's some historical examples of left violence in over the last 100, 150 years. So we're going to start off talking about that a little bit, and then we're going to get into a little bit of the contemporary situation, like talking about what the reality is if we look at studies and stats and things like that. And so I'm going to pass it to Bob for the historical piece.
Yeah, I think this is something that often comes up, and it's a real, the irony is because on the left, there has always been a wide scale denunciation of violent tactics. And even today, the vast majority of leftists begin everything they say with, I condemn Hamas, or I condemn the attack on Charlie Kirk, I condemn shooting at ICE. So the left has never been engaged in violence, right? Violence, political violence, and political violence, there are many ways to describe it and define it. I think each of us has our own, but it's not that kind of random violence, like shooting somebody for money or because you're in a dispute over domestic violence or something like that. It's done in the service of a larger issue. And that has been overwhelmingly right-wing. I'm not even going to start with the early period in American history of things like Bacon Rebellions, slave uprisings. Those were always attacked very viciously, very violently, with great force. But in the period after the Civil War, especially the period of industrialization, you started to see actual kind of conflict, violent conflict, class conflict, things like the Great Strike of 1877 or Haymarket or Homestead or whatever, all the way up through things like the Battle of Blair Mountain. If there's one example, I would say, in U.S. history where you actually have violence coming at each other from both sides, it would be something like the Battle of Blair Mountain, when you had like 10,000 miners who mostly were armed against the U.S. Army. And so, but for the most part, these were massacres. Today, Hegseth announced he's going to, give Medal of Honors to the people who were at Wounded Knee. That's a massacre. That's not a battle. And that's what we're dealing with for the most part, right-wing massacres. And we have this idea, we've been brought up with the notion of left-wing resistance with things like People's History of the United States, which is incredibly important to all of us, right? But resistance is fighting back, but it was never done with the same force and aggressiveness that you saw from the right, right? So we have this long history, and there are times when the left fought back, and there are times when the left did use means outside of peaceful coexistence or nonviolent direct action. You have things like Haymarket. The Wobblies were engaged in labor conflict. You had general strikes, the Battle of Blair Mountain, the Little Steel Strike. So there were incidents, but they were few and far between. There's not really much of a history of left-wing, let alone violence, but aggressive responses to most of these things. And when they did happen, they were generally snuffed out pretty quickly by the overwhelming force of the ruling class. And in a sense, in a very real sense, portraying violence in this left-right spectrum doesn't really work. It's really from the top to the bottom. It's the ruling class against the people. But politically, it's overwhelmingly ideologically right-wing. And we're talking about, and again, I think it's important to understand, by violence, we mean actual acts of violence, like destruction, attacks on people, not words. Eugene Debs was jailed for his words. And we have plenty of cases like that. HUAC went after people for their words or their poetry or their plays that they did, like Dalton Trumbull, or their music, like Pete Seeger, right? Accusing them of fomenting violence or inciting violence. We know clearly that's not the case. There have been all kinds of surveys, all kinds of studies that, based on actual research, violence is overwhelmingly done by actors or state-affiliated actors. We're not talking about state violence, which is a whole other thing. If you start to include things like the police killing people, then, oh my God, the numbers are just incredibly overwhelming. 1,200 people are missing from Alligator Auschwitz. That's violence. That's real violence. That's not saying Charlie Kirk was a bad guy, right? And clearly the attack on Charlie Kirk, the murder of Charlie Kirk, has had a lot to do with this, right? They're blaming the left for it, even though by all accounts, both the murder of Charlie Kirk and the recent attack on ICE, the people who perpetrated it, Robinson and John or Jan, whatever his name was, don't fit into any kind of left-wing framework. And they certainly weren't. Even police authorities came out and said that they acted alone, right? They may have libertarian instincts. They were active in 4chan and kind of dark web. So there's
an important piece of that is that they were both really deep into gamer culture. which the politics are libertarian, maybe right-wing, but also at a certain level, apolitical as well.
Yeah. There, yeah, it's not a left-wing. We don't have, Trump is trying to criminalize what he calls Antifa. And as everybody who has any sense knows, like, that's not a group. That's not an organization. There's no Antifa in, international or it's.
You know how I know Antifa is not a real organization, Bob? Because I don't get 40 texts a day asking me to donate to their candidates. Yeah. Just saying.
And it's so preposterous, right? To say Antifa is domestic terrorist. And when in normal times you'd laugh it off and say, the courts are going to throw this out. And courts probably will. But we're at this point now where when something gets to the Supreme Court, who knows, right? But Trump is trying to create this idea that you have these violent left-wing people who are organized in Antifa, which stands for anti-fascist. So if you're against Antifa, you're pro-fascist. You're pro-fa, you're not Antifa.
Right.
And we're in this bizarre position, but I think it's really crucial historically to understand this is not a both sides issue. It's never been a both sides issue. There have been instances when the left fought back. There have been instances when the left in the early, like late teens, early 20s, around World War I, there were a series of bombings at places like banks and Wall Street offices and so forth, conducted by people who would be considered anarchists. And of course, as you and I both know, anarchists aren't organized in like large groups or anything like that. Most of these people were in small cells acting alone. So again, even when there is, the Weather Underground blew up a cloakroom in the Senate in the 1960s. Look at how hard it is for somebody who studied U.S. history his whole life to pull these examples out, because they're just not that many. They're just not that many. I guess more contemporary terms would be somebody like Luigi Mangione. But Luigi wasn't any kind of dedicated left-wing political enthusiast. He was pissed off at what healthcare was doing to him.
He was publicly stated he was a fan of Peter Thiel and Elon Musk. He also was very interested in the Unabomber, which we won't have to go to. We don't need to go down those that political rabbit hole. Luigi, as well as Tyler Robinson and Joshua Yan or John in Dallas this week, all were like lone wolves, too, is really clear thing to point out there.
Yeah. Whereas on the right, you have McKay, which is engaged in violence for decades, actual killing people, which kind of leads to things like Dylann Roof, right? Who killed, I forget, a dozen people in a church, right? A dozen African-Americans in a church. You have the more
nine.
Recently,
there was nine. It was nine parishioners.
Okay. You have the Proud Boys. You have the Oath Keepers. You have these kind of neo-Nazi cells. You have the people who on January 6, 2001, were wearing shirts celebrating Auschwitz. You have the murder of Heather Heyer done by organized right-wing and white nationalists, right? You have these constant attacks and threats against librarians and against teachers and against just kind of civil servants. And the idea, and Trump is trying to promote this, saying it's the left-wing violence. And of course, corollary to that is now it's transgender violence. And I don't remember the poll I saw, and I don't remember how it defined political violence, but in this period, there were like several thousand episodes of what they determined were political violence. Four might be attributable to an actor who was transgendered. 80-some percent were right-wing white men. And if there is any group, if you want to like racially profile any group, it's white men who are violent.
I think it's also important to mention, and there's a little bit out of the sort of more current era, but the deadliest domestic terror attack in U.S. history was in 1995 in Oklahoma City, where 168 people were killed by Timothy McVeigh, a white man who was in a right-wing militia. And if we're looking at this in like a sort of rational sort of way, like it's clear that the violence that leads to the greater number of fatalities with like guns and bombs and things like that is being perpetrated by people who align more with like right-wing philosophy and ideology than the left.
Well, have you ever heard of a scourge of left-wing militias? I've never heard of a left-wing militia.
No.
You have some groups like the New Black Panthers or the John Brown Gun Club who are out there publicly. They're just walking around saying we're defending ourselves with our Second Amendment rights, right?
Socialist Rifle Association too.
Yeah, yeah. But you never hear of like left-wing militias who are engaging in acts. Those people really, and think of the Black Panther, it was, the official name was the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And so everybody's caught up in this idea that unless you're somehow committed to Gandhian nonviolence, you are violent. And that's just utterly preposterous. And it gets to the real issue here is, I think, is what we're seeing from the other side. who engages in violence as a political strategy and kind of always has to some degree, but it's clearly taken off in the last decade with Trump. In 2016, during his campaign, Trump said that his support, if Hillary Clinton won, his supporters might seek Second Amendment solutions. He's basically saying, go out and shoot Hillary Clinton. That's not terribly covert. That's not really cryptic. The kid who shot up the Santa Fe Mall invoked Trump and Tucker Carlson and the Great Replacement Theory. You have right-wing representatives like Massey, Boebert, Green, who always would tweet out pictures of them and their whole family with guns, you know, advocating gun ownership and gun solutions. And most recently, Fox News, while carrying the torch for left-wing violence, its anchors are actually aggressively encouraging people to go out and commit acts of violence.
We have violent Brian Kilmeade, the host of Fox and Friends, saying that we should just euthanize all homeless people. And then we had Jesse Waters saying that we should bomb the UN because they sabotaged Trump's escalator. Yeah. And the other two I just want to throw out there, because there's a lot of examples of this, but like the 2018 Tree of Life synagogue attack in Pittsburgh, where 11 people were killed, that person espoused like right-wing neo-Nazi sort of philosophy and ideology. The 2019 El Paso Walmart massacre, where an anti-immigrant who wrote a manifesto on that, he's actually one of the first people identified as what we call eco-fascist. He killed 23 people, most of which were, it was in El Paso, so it was mostly like Latino, Mexican-American folks. And then actually the most recent real instance of right-wing violence is the assassination of Democratic Minnesota state rep, former House Speaker of the Minnesota Legislature, Melissa Hortman, and her husband and their dog, their family dog.
Well, then a few weeks after that, an anti-vaxxer attacked CDC and shot a security guard there named David Rose.
Right.
And you heard nothing about that. No talk. And these can actually be tied to a right-wing ideology. And I think that's the key point. So let's just throw out there that Luigi's hatred of healthcare, the healthcare complex, corporate healthcare, which was a left-wing issue, when in fact it's not. Everyone hates the American healthcare system. But if you're going to say, okay, he had a left-wing ideology because he hated United Healthcare, then you have countless instances where people with right-wing ideology went out and convicted acts of violence, right?
Yeah, and because we're the Green and Red podcast, we're just throwing out examples, terrible examples. But just looking at the stats, studies have shown that 75 to 80% of U.S. domestic terrorism deaths since 2001 in the U.S., it's 75 to 80% are people who more identify with like right-wing ideology. Yeah. This is such a sort of glaring fact that the Trump Justice Department just removed an important government-sponsored study of domestic terrorism, because they know it's too damning for people with right-wing ideology. The other thing I want to throw out here too is that politically, despite all of these facts and despite all these examples, politically motivated the U.S. is actually fairly rare compared to like other parts of the world, compared with overall violent crime in the U.S. And what is the majority of violent crime that happens in the U.S. is mostly domestic violence, people against their families, against their partners. And it's just something to remind people of as well. But the political violence, which Trump is now waging war on his sort of institutional opposition, is in many ways overblown, and it's just an opportunity. He's just taken an opportunity.
It's ironic too, right? Because essentially what they've done is they've like now taken over the banner of hate speech, right? When hate speech laws came out, 20 so years ago or whatever, which there were some of us on the left who said, this is not a good idea, right? But whatever. But it was the right wing who attacked that. Words and everyone. Now, after Charlie Kirk, people are getting harassed and fired or even arrested, essentially for quoting Charlie Kirk's own words, right? Charlie Kirk had an organ. If you say, Charlie Kirk said a lot of stuff that I would consider racist or sexist. I do believe there are free speech protections for saying stuff that even is disgusting and odious. But Turning Point USA wasn't just a free speech organization. Turning Point USA went after people. They went after people. They created a big database of people they wanted to attack and harass. Those people who ended up on that database, some of whom I know, were harassed. Their employers were called. They received death threats. Some of them had to get protection for their families, for their children at school. They had police escorts for their children at school and elementary school. Some were actually brought before their employers. Some lost their jobs. Some contemplated suicide. That's not a free speech issue. Charlie Kirk's organization, Turning Point Church, was inciting violence. I'll defend free speech. I have no problem with that. But for people like Ezra Klein or Gavin Newsom or Ben Burgess to go on about this is the right to debate and it's no, that's free speech is free speech. And we should defend that vigorously. And the left hasn't always been great about that with things like that's triggering or your words are violent against me, right? But what Turning Point USA did and what Trump is doing is an incitement. I'm not a lawyer, but I'm pretty sure there's a big difference between incitement, encouraging violence, providing the means for violence. That's genocide law, actually. One of the famous people at Nuremberg was a caricaturist named Keitel. And he was convicted of genocide, right, at Nuremberg for the caricatures he did of Jews, right? So this isn't free speech. Charlie Kirk wasn't out there engaging in people. Charlie Kirk was inciting people to attack others. Charlie Kirk in 2023 said that he thinks that Biden should be executed, right? So we've moved beyond the idea of free speech saying really disgusting things, which I believe the First Amendment should protect, to actually inciting people and encouraging people to dox others, to ruin people's lives, to threaten people. I think you and I have received death threats, and I don't know how serious. This was 20 years ago, luckily, so I didn't take it that seriously. Today, it's a different ballgame. I mean, I know so many people who get death threats now for writing an op-ed or being interviewed on the news or whatever. I would always get nasty emails after I had something in the Houston Chronicle or I was on local news, but it didn't concern me that much. KPFT came after me. Pacifica, the great left-wing free speech advocates came after me, right? It didn't bother me that much. It's a different ballgame now. You have to take these things seriously nowadays. And you have the president who throws gasoline on every fucking match he's ever seen. Everything he's ever seen. Use his words. And the media lets him go. The media just lets him get away with this.
Yeah, it's horrible. How many 2020 election officials were, you know, doxxed and harassed based on like stuff that Trump put out into the ether, into the sphere?
He tweeted out pictures of the families, the children of judges who were overseeing his case. At that point, he should have been brought into custody. Merrick Garland didn't do anything about him, right? Macron and Bolsonaro are going to jail. And Trump is fucking president.
Sarkozy. No,
Sarkozy, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I wish it was unbelievable. This is what we've seen. But remember, Gerald Ford had to pardon Nixon because Nixon was, there was probably going to be action taken against him. Now, and Republicans went after Nixon. Now you have a Republican Party totally in the tank. And then you have Democrats. What was it? 75 Democrats voted for a resolution praising Charlie Kirk, the guy who urged that president of their party be executed. And the idea that the way the media portrays this as left, so the left becomes like Kamala Harris, right, or whatever. We're living in such a surreal Alice in Wonderland world, it's hard to make sense of it. It's impossible. I think, going back to what you said a minute ago, the Minnesota killings, I think, really are instructive, right? Because that's a huge story. This guy had a hit list of, what, 60 names on it. He was going around. He shot somebody else, too. His wife was caught heading to the border with a car full of weapons and ammunition.
And money and passports.
That's it. It died. The story died, right? Trump refused to put the flags at half-staff, he claims, because Tim Walz never asked him to. The Republican senator from Utah, Mike Lee, tweeted out this disgusting stuff about Melissa Ortman. They initially claimed that the killer was left-wing and Marxist and all that shit, which is utterly... They make stuff up, and the media can't wrap its head around the fact that this is just lies. It's made up. You don't need to analyze. When Trump says, we got $17 trillion, you just know that's not true. When Trump says all this violence is being done on the left wing, you just know that's not true.
There's a certain point where I'm this week, Kash Patel as soon as he saw them, tweeted out pictures from the ICE shooting in Dallas where it said anti-ICE on the bullets, and said this is proof that this guy had like leftist affiliations. One, I don't know any leftists who would actually say anti-ICE. They would
they'd
more
say
like
fuck ICE.
Maybe abolish ICE if they're like being genteel, but they would say fuck ICE. And So there's a certain level at which I, and Kash Patel does lots of things publicly, which makes me question his intelligence. There's also a certain level where I think that they just, it's just, it's not just Trump who incites and lies constantly, makes stuff up. Is that I think there's also a certain level where they know it's not true and they just say it anyway. They just, yeah, Stephen Miller, the stuff that Stephen Miller has been saying lately has been particularly abhorrent. He's going to come after the radical left and dismantle it. And they're all just completely making stuff up to get away with whatever they're doing. And and you're right, the media doesn't question them. And there's a lot of outrage about it on social media from like left progressive circles. We're not, and we're seeing like valiant actions in Los Angeles and New York and Chicago this morning. People were blocking ICE vehicles until they got tear gas and dispersed. So there's like a lot of important things happening. But it's pretty amazing to me that like at the top of our liberal institutions, which are continually failing us, whether it's the political institutions or whether it's the courts or whether it's the media, it's just not, there's nobody pushing back. And these people constantly lie. They constantly wound themselves actually with their incompetence. And yet no one takes an opportunity to finish them off. It's amazing. Like Hegseth is completely incompetent. He was a major in the National Guard. He served in Iraq, and he's like waging internal bureaucratic warfare on generals and admirals. Kash Patel, same with the FBI bureaucracy. It's just amazing that no one really pushes back on these people to like just put them out of business.
Elon Musk tweeted that it's always transgenders, right? That's so utterly insane. Like I said, there was a survey that said 4 possibly out of 4,000, right? And yet this goes out there. The right has an entire infrastructure that produces violence. It manufactures violence. It distributes violence. It commodifies violence. People on the left, even if they wanted to, don't have that because they will be stopped by their own people. The Democratic Party attacks its own. They punch left. Kamala Harris the other day called Trump a communist dictator. We've just had 10 years of Trump is a fascist, but Gavin Newsom and Kamala Harris have decided that Trump is actually a communist. They can't help it. They punch left. They're that stupid and that incompetent. The left has nothing similar. The greatest purveyor of violence, remember Martin Luther King in 1967 said the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is the U.S. government, right? The greatest purveyor of violence in the world today is, in fact, still the U.S. government. Domestically as well, ICE is going out there and beating the shit out of people, arresting people without any warrant, without any due process. It's going after U.S. citizens. It's pepper spraying people, flashbanging people. That's violence. That's right-wing state-sanctioned violence.
ICE is starting to do criminal investigations of U.S. citizens, which is actually illegal. Their remit is only to enforce immigration law, not criminal law. If it was the FBI, it would be a different story. But just to put that out there, too, they're targeting, there's a lot of resistance, people fighting back against what ICE is doing, and it's making it very disruptive for ICE. And so ICE is targeting people on like platforms like Instagram and so on and so forth. But
we're seeing images today of the police in LA beating the shit out of people, police in New York beating the shit out of people. Those are Democratic cities. Somehow Gavin Newsom has become this icon, right? And his trolling is funny. I giggle at it. I think it's funny, right? Gavin Newsom and Karen Bass are not friends of the left in any way. They're out there sending their forces they control to attack people who are protesting against ICE, which is conducting these really horrific raids and attacks and denying people their basic constitutional rights, right? So there's no infrastructure, right? The idea that this is a left side, a left-right issue, that it's a both side issue, that there are extremists on both sides. You ever notice extremists on both sides, they'll invoke like AOC and Boebert or AOC and Kash Patel or whatever. AOC denounces everything that happens, right? She denounced the attack on Charlie Kirk. She prays for ICE and does all this kind of shit. Whereas people on the right are actively inciting you to go out and shoot people like Trump did today, right? They're bad on Trump. And of course, Trump is a big, fat, addled bag of shit. He's never fought a day in his life. He's not a tough guy. Ted Cruz isn't a tough guy. Tom Hall or Josh Hawley certainly isn't a tough guy. The way he's screaming and running around the halls on January 6th. Tom Cotton. These are basically mama's boys who can act tough because they're protected, right? It's easy to act tough when you got a bunch of people in front of you, when you have a phalanx of U.S. military and cops and ICE agents in front of you, right? So this is where we are. But I think the left has to reckon with this and not continue to apologize. The left, the right wing is just making up shit, making up lies, and people on the left are on the defensive. Oh, no, we're not. Move on. Do what you have to do.
We're in a moment where truth and facts don't matter. We're in a sort of post-truth moment. And so what we're doing right now is allowing them to define the narrative based on whatever comes in their heads at that moment.
And for the record, I've been in leftist circles my whole life. I've never heard anybody say, let's be violent, because they're smart enough to understand that the right wing has like drones and nukes and unlimited budgets. This is King and others used to have this discussion with some of the younger people in the 60s who were Black Panther oriented, who said, we need to fight back. And King always had this moral argument against violence. But at the end of the day, he also said, look, we'll get destroyed if that happens, right? Right-wing, Bull Connor, Lori Pritchett, Ross Barnett, George Wallace, that wasn't a left-wing group, right? So violence in the United States, political violence in the U.S. has always been overwhelmingly, often exclusively right-wing. They've always gotten away with it. It's always been forgiven. Left-wing violence is really hard to come by. Usually it was conducted as a response to either industrial conditions or to actual right-wing repression. You have a few counterexamples of that, the strike wave of 1877 or the Battle of Blair Mountain. But for the most part, there's not much there. And certainly I'm not going to sit here and advocate left violence, because that would be stupid on a million different grounds, right? But we cannot let them continue to define this that way. And we have to come on and do our thing and organize and just ignore them and quit thinking for a moment that the Democratic Party or the labor movement or anybody's going to come and help you, because they're not. They're
right
not there.
The community organizing, the community resistance that we're seeing in the cities right now is the most important thing we have.
Which is all nonviolent. Absolutely.
Yep. Right. Yep. We had someone from ACE, the Alliance for Californians for Community Empowerment, on back before the summer when the Los Angeles stuff was kicking off. And he was like really clear. He's like, 99% of what we're doing are nonviolent marches, nonviolent protests. And they're responding with violence. They sent the Marines in on those folks. And that's what they want to do. Violence. That's what they want to do in a lot of other places.
Like in the summer of 2020, we saw this, right? There was this narrative about left violence was putting a brick through a target window or pulling a statue down. Even people like Martin Luther King contemplated action against property, right? And so the right wants to say, you tore down a Confederate statue, you're violent. That's the same as Dylann Roof or using these words. Like Trump, even he publicly goes on record and says, they're saying bad things about me. So that's violence, right? Jesus Christ, if he's not the biggest cupcake pansy in the entire world, I don't know who would be.
I think we've run our course on this, or is there anything else we want to talk about?
It speaks for itself.
Yeah.
No, I think the issue isn't, I think anybody with any sanity knows that this is preposterous, that not a both sides issue. But I think those of us who are engaged in these struggles need to kind of quit apologizing for our resistance. And the obligatory, before we talk, I denounce Hamas, I denounce it. It doesn't do any good, right? You're just essentially accepting their framework, right? Does Hamas give a shit whether I denounce them? Does anybody care whether a bunch of left-wing intellectuals denounce them? It's the Trotskyists to denounce Cuba. Do you think the Cubans give a shit whether a bunch of American intellectual lefties denounce them? It's like we get caught up in that too much. We let them define the framework, and nobody on the left today is violent, right? And these isolated incidents we have, like Luigi, can't even be attributed to left-wing violence. Who would have thought that American democracy, I don't think any of us are shocked that it's going down the toilet rapidly, but who would have thought it would have occurred over like these insane contrived charges of anti-Semitism and Charlie Kirk? That would be the vehicle by which it finally went away.
There's one other thing I would say. I talked about Chicago. There's like video coming out of Chicago this morning. And I think it's people who are putting their bodies in front of cars, in front of ICE SUVs, and being pushed. And the sort of right-wing rhetoric, the right-wing story is that these people are rioting and attacking ICE vehicles. These are people with guns driving a big SUV, which can like run down people. These are courageous people putting their bodies on the line nonviolently. I didn't see in the video I saw, didn't have people smashing things with rocks or slashing tires or anything like that. And so, whatever. I also don't think property damage is violence, contrary to a lot of other people say. But I just want to say that people are nonviolently resisting this this authoritarian push. And I think it's important to note that despite all of this rhetoric coming from the White House about domestic terrorism and political violence, people are being courageous, putting their bodies on the line, and they're like doing it in a way where they're not harming other people. And ICE in Chicago gunned down a guy. They're the violent ones.
1,300 people are missing. They might have been put in a helicopter and dumped in the ocean. I have no idea. Nobody knows,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not nobody. They know, but...
Netanyahu spoke at the UN this morning. Last night, 100 people who were doing a noise demo outside of his hotel were arrested by the NYPD. Over 100 people were arrested by the NYPD for doing a noise demo. Right? Whatever, Eric Adams is in the pocket of the Zionists and the Trump people. So it doesn't surprise me at all. But like, these are people who are like taking risk and getting arrested for banging on pop to pans and blowing it, talking into bullhorns. So just...
And just last thing, there's also this kind of Orwellian erasure of history that I think is really important. They know that violence is right wing. They've scrubbed, like you pointed out, they scrubbed the website, which talked about extremist violence because it shows with their own government figures that like 80% of it is right wing. Some years ago, there was a study of right wing political movements within the military, which was showing overwhelmingly that you had like Proud Boys and Oath Keepers and Klansmen and things like that organizing within the U.S. military. And Republicans got that scrubbed. They cut funding for it. So it's not even like speculative. There is firm evidence on this and they're erasing it. And the Democratic Party is attacking Trump as a communist while they're doing this. Schumer and Jeffries are sitting with their thumbs in their ass doing nothing while they're doing this.
Strongly worded letters, Bob. Come on.
Strongly worded. Yeah. I think they're getting more strongly worded. Jesus Christ. But anyway, yeah. If you're on the left, you're not an advocate of violence because you're not stupid. It's not a left-right issue. Political violence is not a both sides issue. It's overwhelmingly and often exclusively done by the ruling class or its adjacent paramilitaries or affiliated groups against the people. And that's always been, and it is today.
And those, just also be clear, those reactionary paramilitary forces, those reactionary groups, are doing that in the interest of the ruling class.
Yeah.
Despite what they say.
Immunized by the ruling class, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Trump pardoned everybody from January 6th, which is I'd suspect it's the biggest political riot in U.S. history, the greatest act of political violence in U.S. history, January 6th at one time on domestic soil, not counting 9/11, and Trump pardoned all of them. He pardoned people who killed cops on January 6th. It's not both sides. It's preposterous to assume that people on the left need to quit apologizing and accepting the framework that they've created. Continue the resistance. Much love to you. The bravery, the courage is unbelievable. We saw this in the summer of 2020. We're seeing it today. Political leaders aren't coming to your rescue. Although, as a lefty, I got to give a shout out to Pritzker, the governor of Illinois. He has been very different than Hochul or Adams or Newsom or Bass or any of them.
Yeah.
And so Chicago.
Brandon Johnson too. Mayor
Chicago is living up to its reputation, right? Haymarket lives in the souls of those people.
Yeah. The last thing we wanted to do before we wrap is do a quick word. The late Assata Shakur, who we found out today, passed away. Assata Shakur was part of the Black Panthers and other Black revolutionary movements in the 60s and 70s, was involved with the shootout and was able to escape from prison and actually has spent the last 50-something years in Cuba. A very important figure. And we just want to give a shout out to her. The one thing I pulled, there's a lot of quotes by her going out and around, but I actually pulled the lyrics from a song. It's called Rebel Without a Pause by Public Enemy, where they said, hard my calling card, recorded and ordered, supporter of Chesimard, loud and proud, kicking live necks, poet supreme, loop a troop, bazooka, the scheme. And so that's a shout out. Assata Shakur's name before she changed it to Assata was Joanne Chesimard. And so Public Enemy, shout out to them for shouting out to her. And rest in peace, Assata.
Very famous nephew.
Oh, yeah. She did have a very famous nephew too. And Tupac Shakur as well. Sorry, I didn't even think about that.
Named after the Tupac Amaru, which was a indigenous revolutionary group in Uruguay.
Rest in power, Assata Shakur. Hopefully we'll live up to some of your revolutionary, your dreams. This is the Green and Red Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and Blue Sky. If you're watching this on YouTube, hit that subscribe button. If you're listening to us on an audio platform, guess what? Is it a rate and review? If you really like us, go to greenandredpodcast.org and hit that support button or become a patron at patreon.com/greenredpodcast.
And tell your friends.
And the word out. We're going to have a whole lot more swag. And so we'll have t-shirts and we still have a lot of hats. And so just email us at greenredpodcast@gmail.com if you want some swag. And we'll talk to you all again soon. So make trouble and misbehave.